This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars. They are hulking, but graceful, human-made whales that float in the air. For over 100 years, lighter-than-air aircraft have fascinated us, and they have this recurring, starring role in our dreams of an alternate reality, of a future that might have been, where cargo and passengers traverse the globe in a civilized fashion and dock elegantly on the mooring towers on top of Art Deco skyscrapers. For around 100 years, lighter-than-air aircraft were seriously proposed as the perfect design solution for all kinds of problems.
In the 90s, there was a company called SkyStation. They raised some $4.2 billion, or at least solicited it, to put 250 antenna-equipped airships to deliver internet service.
This is Bill Hammack. He's the engineer guy on YouTube and an airship enthusiast.
In the 20s and 30s, they were to fulfill imperial ambitions. Both Germany and the British were looking for that. And the Americans, too. They had imperial ambitions in the Philippines.
It was those imperial rigid airships, heavily developed in the 20s and 30s, that came the closest to actually changing the world. The most promising, most opulent rigid airship of its time, and I'm talking about the 1920s here, was Britain's R101. The R there stands for rigid. When it comes to the dream of airships dominating the skies, the catastrophic and very public Hindenburg disaster may have been the final nail in the coffin, but it was the crash of R101 that built the coffin. R101 was supposed to connect the global British Empire. It was designed to fly from London to Karachi in 5 days. That's 10 days faster than by sea. Taking a plane that distance took 16 days because planes had to stop so often to refuel. Airships could also carry 30 to 40 times the cargo of airplanes. So Great Britain built R101 and R100, which was its sister ship that was supposed to go to Canada and back, as the first two rigid ships in a fleet that would give the crown dominance over the skies to match its centuries-long dominance of the seas. An airship is conceptually quite simple, but it's still an engineering marvel. It's a gargantuan, cigar-shaped math equation, balancing lift on one side of the equation and weight on the other. Minimizing the weight of the airship was always a challenge.
There's that rigid metal framework, and that is one of the most difficult parts because that has to be lightweight yet strong.
On the other side of the equation is lift. You get lift from pumping in gas that's lighter than air. In the case of R101, the gas they used was hydrogen.
In a ship like R101, if you filled it with helium, you would not have enough lift to lift the ship.
The flammability of hydrogen was indeed a concern in airships, but flight engineers and crew were habituated to its dangers, much like we're habituated to the dangers of combustion engines today.
One engineer pointed out you don't light a match and look in your gas tank in your car when you're driving around with something highly flammable all of the time right now. You get the proper engineering solutions and controls to do it.
The gas bags that contain the hydrogen are their own engineering marvel.
You have a problem in that hydrogen wants to permeate. So you need something that's very strong, that is impermeable to hydrogen, or largely impermeable, and that is lightweight. And so they tried things like rubber, gelatin, glycerin, something called viscose, which is a synthetic fabric. It's coated with latex. But they all failed one way or another. So they used, and this stuns me to this day, the intestines of an oxen. And specifically, the oxen intestine, it's lined with a very fine membrane. It's called the cecum, and it's very thin and flexible, and hydrogen seeps only slowly through it.
Ox intestines are nearly the perfect material, except for the size.
The cecum of an ox is about 30 inches by 6 inches, so a little over a square foot. And yet one of those gas bags, if you laid it out, is 30,000 square feet. There's over 1.5 million oxen intestines that were needed to create the 15 gas bags for R101. And it was fairly grisly work. They delivered from slaughterhouses in Argentina, at least some of the animals, barrels of these guts, and then they would scrape them and go through this long process to prepare them and eventually to glue them together.
R101 had a few test flights in and around its hangar outside London to great fanfare. In fact, Bill Hammack surmises that the focus on PR and fanfare rather than more rigorous and deliberative testing led to the tragedy that was about to come on the ship's first attempted flight to India in 1930.
It had left on October 4th, about 6:30 at night. About 54 people on board traveled across England. It traveled across the Channel into France, and there were these bruising winds. It was just winds so fierce that ground speed was only 30 miles per hour or so. And then a few minutes past 2, it was about 40 miles or 64 kilometers north of Paris, and it kind of chopped through the turbulent air, flying at about 1,200 feet, but moving up and down a couple of hundred feet. And the top cover ripped open. The rain pelted the gas bags. There was some decrease in lift, maybe dropped to 500 feet or so. And the control car, and no one knows why today, signaled for the engine power to be cut off. And of course, it lost all dynamic lift at that point. And it drove nose first to the ground. It slid into a grove of hazel and oak trees, and it burst into flame. At that point, just everything became charred. Only 6 people survived it. The ground was littered with these, you know, very sad everyday things. I mean, suitcases, fur-lined boots, shard shaving brushes, tin of cigarettes. I think there was a ticking watch still there. And then it was very quiet, and all you could hear was the hiss of the rain as it hit the hot metal and it evaporated.
The wreckage had barely cooled when the British government halted their airship program for good.
It was almost immediate. R-100 had flown to Montreal and back, and it was in a shed, and it never flew again. They eventually steamrolled R-100, sold some of the parts for scrap, sold some of it to people who wanted souvenirs.
At this point, the airplane has had a century's worth of development in efficiency, speed, and safety, so that the need for the airship has been largely eliminated. But it passed its precedent. Some enterprising engineer is in a room full of venture capitalists right now trying to convince them that giant airships are the solution to some pressing world problem. In the meantime, the airship will continue on in science fiction stories as this quick and easy visual cue that we're in a world that's like ours, but somehow more wondrous. .99% Invisible is Delaney Hall, Kurt Kohlstedt, Katie Mingle, Sharif Youssef, Avery Truffleman, Emmett Fitzgerald, Taryn Mazza, Sean Rial, and me, Roman Mars. Edited for radio by Vika Aronson. We are a project of 91.7 KALW and Radiotopia. Find out more at 99pi.org.